Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And all of you HR leaders out there, let me ask you one simple question. Are you tired of wrangling all these messy spreadsheets together that you're downloading and exporting from all your different HR systems to try to make one single dashboard or report that you, your HR team, and leadership team can use to better understand your workforce? I know a lot of you are doing it, and it sucks. It's terrible. You know why? Because you tell me every day, which is why we're talking to lots of HR leaders now about our product Employee Cycle, which is a people dashboard for all of you HR leaders out there that are working at small and medium companies and don't have the time to do this yourself. We have pre-built API connectors to the most popular HR systems you're using. That's right, systems like Bamboo HR, Namely, Greenhouse, Reflective, Office 5, 15.5, Trinet, ADP, you name it, to be able to pull all your data into one single data-driven view so you can view, track, share, and analyze all your people data from one place. Please visit employeecycle.com. Check us out. You can get a demo. We'd love to talk to you about how we can automate your HR reporting and analytics process. Well, that's enough about me and our company, because today we have a very special guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Derek Irvine. He's the SVP of Work Human and also recent author of the book, Making Work Human. And today we're going to discuss why businesses no longer have to choose between head, heart, and wallet. Derek, welcome to the podcast. Woo! Derek, welcome!
Thank you.
So, Derek, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, and that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, so I worked for many years in consumer marketing. I worked in Johnson & Johnson and also in the drinks business, marketing for Jameson Irish Whiskey. You might detect a bit of an Irish accent there. And I also worked for many years in performance improvement, in strategy, working with organizations to help improve their performance. And about 20 years ago, I met the co-author of the book that you just mentioned, Eric Mosley, and he convinced me to join a company that he had just recently started, which would be focused on helping employees to understand their workplace better, feel better in their workplace. And I kind of thought, well, you know, where I've come from, the experience of consumer marketing is about helping consumers understand the products they're buying, enjoying those products. Performance improvement is about where we can all win together when we do things better. So this startup company was really appealing to me. And for the last 20 years, that's what I've been doing, helping Work Human to bring more humanity into our workplaces, so that we all, as the humans that work in those places, feel better, but also that the companies that we're employed by are also doing better. It's a win-win for everybody.
Awesome. And then can you give us a super quick 30-second overview and plug for the book?
Yeah. So, you know, years ago, management style was driven by the Industrial Revolution. The way that we managed people was, check yourself in at the door, please, because all we need is either your hands or we need just your brain. That's enough. That's all we're going to utilize. Whereas there's a realization that if we can actually allow people to come to work as their whole human selves, bringing their heart, their emotions, that we all get to win. Employees feel happier, they feel more contented in themselves, and that in turn means that people work safer, they work more productively, they're more innovative, they're more creative. So it becomes a win-win for both sides. That's what creating human-centered companies is about.
Awesome. So I'm super interested in this topic because it's very compelling. And just to reiterate what we're talking about today, we're discussing why businesses no longer have to choose between head, heart, and wallet. And so for our audience, I would love for you to break down all three of these. And the first part that I want to start with is the head. If a business is leading and choosing the head, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned there a moment ago, the technology revolution was certainly a time when we were very focused upon the head. We needed new skills that were going to be able to do programming and develop lots of technology. And we had whole suites of, for example, software developed in the HR area, which were HRIS systems, but virtually all of them were bureaucracy focused. helping us to manage projects better, managing time better, checking your holidays, making sure you did a course. And if you take a sort of a folder and you put all of those different applications together, you know, a big substantial folder. But over all of the years, what's been lacking is the folder that's about the heart, the emotional side. What are we investing in to create human connection in our workplace? So when you focus only on the head, you get all of that bureaucracy, all of that administration. And well, we don't have people with only heads walking around in the real world, do we?
Got it. So the head here, and I love that analogy, but the head here is really the operational and the efficiency part of the business, correct?
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, so now let's go to heart. What does that mean for a company to choose to lead with the heart?
Yeah, so time and time again, when you ask employees, what do they really want from the workplace? And we did this quite recently in 24,000 employees survey. Time and time again, meaningful work with purpose is their number one goal. And many people would prefer to take a job with less money if there was more security around meaningfulness and purpose. So what you need to have in the workplace too is the heart, the emotional connection. Because otherwise what you end up with in the workplace is just a transactional connection. It's a financial contract. You know, do A, B, C, D, and I will pay you. And that's it. Whereas if you can also have the heart, you have an emotional connection. And when people have emotional connection, they go above and beyond. They're looking beyond the obvious. They're being ambassadors for your company in the marketplace. They're attracting other talent to your company. They're being innovative. They're being creative. They are your future as a consequence. You've got to get the head and the heart working together at the same time.
Got it. So the emotional connection in the way that you actually bond with the employees, that's the heart, correct?
So the heart, and it's not just about, I should say, the company and the individual employee. It's really about having human connection in all of the workplace. Because the second most important thing employees told us that they wanted was co-worker relationships, where they felt that they had, you know, colleagues and were part of a community. They felt like they genuinely belong at work. They could bring their true diverse selves to work, the workplace, that they would be respected in the workplace. You know, that's a really important factor, that it's not just my relationship as an individual with the company, but my relationship with all of my colleagues around me. So you create a work community that's genuinely filled with, yes, with logical things that we need to do using our head, but together we're using our heart frequently to create purpose together, to do great things together, to celebrate our successes together. That's the combination you're looking for.
Got it. And then last but not least, the wallet. What does it look like for a company to exclusively lead with the wallet?
Yeah, so I think for decades, you know, we were thinking that a command and control sort of born in the Industrial Revolution way of managing delivered the most profits. That was the only way to do it. People literally had to check their emotional true selves in at the door. Hard decisions needed to be made. That was the idea. And many people might have thought, well, it would be the morally correct thing to do to treat people with greater humanity. But there wasn't a belief that it would be positive for the bottom line. Well, the good news is, and as we describe in our book, Making Work Human, the good news is that we have a decade now of working with some of the world's most admired companies, and we have distinctly proven that when you behave in a very human way, when you create a human-centered workplace, you thrive. You thrive above your peers. Specifically, just taking one metric, for example, we discovered that companies that behave in that way, they see a productivity boost of about $1,800 per employee every year as a result of behaving in that more human-centered way. And I think, Bruce, you get why instantly, because the people who are working in that company, they feel better, they're more passionate, they feel connected to their colleagues, they wow their customers more. You know, everybody gets to win as a result. Customers are feeling the energy from a company that has that type of focus.
So I'm sure there are HR leaders out there and maybe even CEOs or executives out there saying, I totally hear why you should lead with the head, the heart, and the wallet, but we've been using just one of these as our North Star, and things have been fine. So I'm curious to know, for those who are listening, how would you define the cons and the problems with leading with any one of these individually? And then what does it look like specifically for our audience of HR leaders to lead with all three?
Yes. But I think, you know, it's something that's quite basic that's at the core of this, and it's the right to be human. You know, humans are not human capital as we used to think about it before. Companies don't have the right to take in this capital and not respect the entire human self. And I think that's the way we in society are seeing it more and more. Certainly the new generation is seeing it that way, that they're saying, I have a right to work in a place that sees beyond just the head or just the wallet. You know, you think about the trouble Uber had going back over a number of years ago, and you know they had across social media hashtag delete Uber because of problems where they were, you know, arguably leading with just the head and the wallet. There wasn't a respect for the people in the workplace and creating a safe work environment. So I think as human beings, we have a fundamental right now to behave in a way that all three are respected. And that's a societal trend, I would quite honestly say. So organizations that decide to ignore that, well, they may well survive in the short term, but long term, their long game is a losing game.
So one of the things that we like to do on our show is to really get the guest to create some type of framework or foundation for our HR audience to walk away from and say, okay, Derek said this. I may not be able to implement all of these things, but at least it gives me a sense of direction of where I should go to do this. So to make this as practical as possible, if I'm an HR leader listening to this and I want to figure out, because I believe everything you're saying and I'm truly bought into what Derek is saying, you're an expert in this, you wrote a book on it, I want to do this. Where should I start to figure out how to make sure that our company is not just doing just one or two of these, but all three? Do I start with trying to identify which one are we leading the most with? Do I need to come up with a plan? Is there a template to follow? How does this work?
Yes, that's a great question, Bruce. And what I would say is that most organizations are very good at the head part and also pretty good at the wallet part. It's the heart that's the difficult challenge. So what we write about in the book is that we've discovered over the last 20 years that I've been doing this with some of the world's most admired companies, companies like LinkedIn, Cisco, is that there's three really powerful words a HR leader can focus upon to introduce more heart into their company. And the first of those words is thanking. Spotting employees when they've done great things and thanking them, saying, I see what you did. I value what you did. I want to thank you for what you did. Allowing colleagues to do that, that it's not only just manager to peer, but it's the community getting to thank each other. So that's number one word. That's super powerful. Number two word is talking to each other frequently. And I don't mean talking about the weather, nor talking about today's project, but talking authentically on a continuous basis throughout the year. But how are you doing? How are you really doing? What skills can we develop? How can we help you to connect more with colleagues in the workplace, genuinely talking to each other? Third really powerful word is celebrate, celebrating things together. In our normal human lives, we're constantly celebrating birthdays, births of children, graduations, maybe a charity community event I organized. Those are the real things that are happening in our real human lives because we work together so many hours and now we're in each other's offices and living rooms through Zoom, it's really important that we celebrate our real lives together. So those three words, looking out for opportunities to thank, opportunities to talk authentically, and opportunities to celebrate, incredibly powerful drivers, as we describe in the book, for creating human-centered workplaces that really do thrive.
With you working in the HR space, I'm sure you are very aware that it's very difficult a lot of times for HR to get budget and executive buy-in from the leadership team to make cultural changes, especially something like this where it seems as though it may require a totally different paradigm shift. So how should an HR leader frame this to talk about the ROI and the business case so that they can get executive leadership buy-in to make this framework happen?
You know, that's one of the great things about our work at WorkHuman. We have a data analytics and organizational behavior group that specifically looks at the ROI of all of this. And the results are incredible. For every cent in a dollar, every penny in a pound, you can achieve remarkable results. For example, at LinkedIn, we discovered that between 6 and 8 thank you moments throughout a year led to a 50% reduction in the likelihood to leave LinkedIn. So if you're LinkedIn and you've got really valuable engineers and technical people and marketing people that you don't want to lose, that's an incredibly small investment that touches an emotional feeling of employees that they're more likely to remain in the company. A metric upon metric that we look at with clients, we see boosts in safety, boosts in productivity, boosts in engagement for incredibly small investments like a cent in a dollar. It can achieve these types of results.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. In regards to who's responsible for doing this, is this something that solely falls on the shoulders of HR? Is this something from the CEO, top down, from the leadership team? Does it start from the bottoms up? How do you approach this to make this happen?
Yeah, it's certainly vital that there's executive sponsorship at the top to initiate this. But that's only the beginning requirement. What I would say then is that the best thing to happen is that it's seen as being the responsibility of everybody. Because this type of culture that I'm talking about, where you have the head and the heart and the wallet, is an everybody thing. And when you encourage employees to feel like they're free to be thanking each other, they're free to be talking authentically to each other, they can celebrate things together, really the culture itself takes over and it brings lots of heart into the organization. If you put that on the shoulders of just the CHRO, it's an impossible task and it's a single point of failure. So the best thing in the world you can do is put in place a framework, but then let all of the humans in the company that work for you take over from there.
Similar to how HR can oftentimes struggle to get executive leadership buy-in, the same thing a lot of the times also happens with budget. So with this framework and putting these things into place, is there typically a large cost associated with this? Does it seem like it's going to require a lot of resources? What does this all typically entail?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier a penny in a pound, 1% of payroll is what we're talking about, is the type of investment that sees incredible results. And when you think about how much you spend in your payroll, and if you can HR honestly say that they know what the ROI of the other 99% is, most HR leaders I talk to can't. Now, of course, you've got to pay people for coming. They've got to have family, resources, car, house, etc. But it's a very small amount of money to be putting into the heart component when it can make such a dramatic difference in how people come to work, feeling psychologically strong, feeling engaged with their workplace. It's a relatively very small investment, especially when it has really big impacts. Like I mentioned, a 50% reduction in likelihood to leave. We see 20 to 30% increases in engagement. I mentioned earlier $1,800 per employee per year productivity boost. You know, the mathematics, just they make sense.
As a company that is focused on the mission of helping increase the data literacy of HR leaders and also helping them align the right metrics to their goals so that they can actually track to see if they're making progress, I would like to know, with this framework, what types of metrics would be applicable here in regards to tracking to really prove the ROI of leading with the combination of the head, heart, and wallet?
Yeah, so literally we've worked with 50 different business metrics that clients have come to us and said, well, what's important to us if we're in the oil and gas business is safety, or if we're in the management consulting business, it's consulting hours, or if we're in the retail business, it's customer experience, or the healthcare business, it was patient satisfaction. And I would say against all of those metrics, we have seen significant double-digit improvements from clients that behave in a more human-centered way, with really leading with the heart too. So those type of metrics at a CEO level are going to be really important. But what's fascinating too about our data is that, of course, each of these thank you moments, talking and celebrating moments, they all create data points that have allowed us to look into our data and to see people's soft skills, if you like. What are people being celebrated for? Maybe there's people who are really strong network creators. Others are great team makers. So there's the high-level data that a CEO and the exec team are going to care about. But then as you dig down into the organization, there's lots of data that can help me as an individual to grow, to discover my soft skills, or to allow a HR team deploy great teams. Fascinating data coming out of this.
Awesome. And then the last question, I know you've been on a podcast tour, and so you're a podcast pro at this point, but for our audience specifically, I would love to know, what is one thing that you've been thinking about that you don't believe you've shared on any other podcast so far?
Sure, that I haven't shared on any other podcast. Well, one of the things that you'll read about in the book is that we're launching what we call a new charter of workplace rights. I certainly haven't said in any other podcast that the reason that we're launching this is that we think that the corporate world needs a bit of a kick in the pants to bring more heart into the workplace across the board much more quickly than we currently are. There's many areas when we look at, you know, Black Lives Matter, the Me Too movement. You know, why are those movements necessary? There's lots of things that we need to improve in the workplace, and we need to do it really fast, giving ourselves a collective kick in the pants.
Derek, thanks so much for being such an awesome podcast guest, for really breaking down a compelling topic that I think a lot of people will resonate with, especially as a lot of HR leaders right now are currently trying to figure out how to rewrite their entire playbook due to all the challenges and the craziness that we've all dealt with during 2020. So thanks again for being on the podcast.
Woo! Derek, thank you!
So where can people find you, WorkHuman, and your book online?
Yeah, well, workhuman.com is the obvious website to go to, and you'll find the book in Amazon and other leading book retailers.
Awesome. So thanks again for being on the show, and for all you listening out there, if you enjoyed this interview as much as Derek and I did making it, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because it shows that you care and that we're providing great content. And also, if this is your very first time listening to one of our interviews, and you came here because you're either already a super fan of Derek and you just had to hear what he was going to say, or you thought this topic was super compelling, but now you're hungry for more interviews, well, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast players. And last but not least, all of you really awesome HR leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.